Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the 156th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire Internet Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our club's league's national team and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com. Check out SoccerNewsDay.com for many of our writers covering all teams in MLS, NASL, U.S. Open Cup, and anything else that tickles your fancy, including the national team. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, you can listen to this program on mtrradio.com. Come on in. The chat room is open. Discuss whatever you like. Come amongst yourselves. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer the best of my ability as I can. And, you know, there is a couple of things I want to get out there before I talk about my intro monologue. First of all, Dave Johnson, of course, he is the play-by-play man of DC United over in Comcast Sportsnet Washington, or Mid-Atlantic, however it's called. He has a brand new thing out with a website, Monumental FC. It's his own soccer show on Monumental FC. If you head over to his website and see all the interviews he does for the D.C. area soccer show. You know it. He does a great job of it, the living legend that he is over in D.C., calling games, being a part of the national team, the national scene. Just absolutely phenomenal what he does, and probably one of the hardest-working guys ever that I know in soccer. Of course, there's many other guys that are hardworking, but I know, you know, Dave Johnson. If you go to monumentalnetwork.com and go to Monumental FC, that's Dave Johnson there for you if you're interested in what DC United does and all that stuff. He does a fantastic job with it. Go to that, monumentalnetwork.com, and you take a look and see what's going on. Many of you know about what's been happening with Chivas USA, how they have changed things up. They're going to go all Mexican-American descent with the players and the coaching staff and everything else. Tonight on HBO's Real Sports with Brian Gumbel, you're going to see that topic, and it's just really unbelievable what's been going on over at Chivas USA with everything changing it from probably what it should be to something that it's going to be. So go to HBO tonight. I believe the program on HBO will be at 10 o'clock Eastern. So whatever channel it is in your area, HBO, or if you know a friend that has HBO and you don't, please go and contact them and find out about this whole thing going on with Chivas USA. You're never going to see something like this in soccer, anything positive. When it comes to Real Sports with Brian Gumbel, they're going to show the negatives. I remember the last time they did a soccer piece, forget about David Beckham. Forget about David Beckham when he came to MLS. But talking about the racism that happened in England with the fans of the Premier League, or at least the fans of English football, obviously the racists that are going on over there, and now they got to find this. And while it's an interesting story, and I bet it's going to be a good one, my problem is that, you know, where's the positives? I mean, what happened with Jurgen Klinsmann taking over for the national team? Or how about when the USA advanced all the way to the quarterfinals in the 2002 World Cup? At that time, Brian Gumbel made a blurb about it at the end of a show of Real Sports. No documentary, no bringing in these players, none of this, none of that. Didn't want to touch it. Just made a blurb saying, good job, but it's not going to mean anything in this country. Well, you know what? How about you do something positive for once, Brian Gumbel? Show something positive about soccer in the United States. I think you could win a lot of people over if you do something positive for once. But the real moment we're trying to talk about is this. Jurgen Klinsmann before, or I guess he's made these comments back in May on the 29th of this year. Because when they went to play El Salvador against, when the U.S. was playing El Salvador in the Gold Cup quarterfinals, this quote leaked out, or it was told to them. And apparently, the head coach of El Salvador was saying, you know, we understand why he said it, but why do you have to say or put in El Salvador's name in the quote? And once again, you're talking about these sort of things, these sort of moments, when you play for a national team, who do you want to face, not only in these friendly matches, but what are you expecting when you got to play these teams when the big moment comes in World Cup qualifying, or at least the World Cup itself? And here's the quote once again. And obviously this was after the loss to Belgium in Cleveland Brown Stadium, or excuse me, First Energy Stadium in Cleveland, Ohio. And the quote is this once again: when you lose these games, it's not such a big pleasure, but I'd rather play Belgium 10 more times than El Salvador for the 100th time, because that's where you learn. Now, well, once again, Klinsmann is right in saying what he's saying, but he's wrong in saying what he's saying, and I'm going to show you and tell you why I believe there's a right and there's a wrong. And let me just say this. I do not disagree with what he's saying about this. I'm not disagreeing at all. I believe that's correct. You want to play the best competition that's in front of you. We all know where the best competition comes from. It's playing these friendly matches against teams either from South America, like in Argentina, like a Brazil, like a Colombia, like, you know, like an everything. And you know what? And the point is that it's true. And at the same time, we all know the top teams in Europe. Obviously, it's England. Obviously, it's Germany. Obviously, it's Italy. You would also have to go with Spain. The French seem to be pretty good on the national team level. And then, of course, you have those up-and-comers like Belgium, possibly a Denmark, possibly a Portugal. Possibly, you would have to say the Netherlands, the Dutch. The Swedes are very strong, too. These are the national teams that you have to play against to prove your worth when you do qualify for the World Cup. Because obviously, the majority of teams that come from a certain confederation is UEFA, Europe. That is the medal you have to go against. Now, here's the wrong way of things. And once again, I'm not blaming Jurgen Klinsmann. I'm not saying what he's saying is incorrect. I'm not saying that he's not wrong. But in a certain way, he is, and I'll tell you why. Who does the United States have to face in World Cup qualifying? The Confederation of CONCACAF, which is obviously the North America, Central America, and Caribbean. It's not like the United States is facing a France, a Germany, an Italy, a Spain, an England in World Cup qualifying. They are not even in the European Cup Championship Tournament. They have to face these countries, these Caribbean islands, Central American countries, in once every two-year tournament in the Gold Cup, as well as a semifinal round and the hexagonal qualifying. I understand what Klinsmann's saying, but you know what? It's not that hard and it's not that difficult to give some credence to the countries or the islands in the Caribbean that you're going to have to face every single World Cup cycle, because that is the number one thing that is in front of them. We all know about Mexico. Mexico will always be there no matter what. There will always be friendlies against Mexico. You will always play Mexico in the Gold Cup, in the finals, whenever you get there. And as always, the two matches in the hexagonal schedule year, the year before the World Cup itself. Mexico will always be there. They will always be the toughest opponent within this confederation. But you know what? I don't want the U.S. national team to assume they are in their own fishbowl like what's going on in England. Let me be honest with you. Honestly, when have you ever seen England play against El Salvador, Honduras, or Costa Rica in Honduras, in El Salvador, and in Costa Rica? They will always have these friendlies either at Wembley, or they'll come across the U.S. to play at MetLife Stadium or M&T Bank Stadium or any NFL stadium in the United States. That's the truth. Or these countries that will never play England will, at their home stadium, will always go to play in Wembley. England will always host their opponents in Wembley unless they feel they want to make the trip across the Atlantic or somewhere else that they feel more comfortable in. And while I understand that maybe Klinsmann doesn't want to face these teams in a friendly basis here in the States, why not entertain the notion of going to a Jamaica, going to a Honduras, going to an El Salvador on a friendly? Go there. Experience what you know you're going to experience during a World Cup qualifying cycle. I don't think it hurts the guys at all. I think it toughens them up. It puts them in a situation when they do face these teams in the next round of qualifying that they know what they know what the, you know, they're better suited for it. You already know it's a hostile environment. You know what's in store for them. You know, they know what's going to be in store for them. And then when they go through qualifying, everything will be better, more advanced, and you don't have to worry about what to expect because you know some of these players. You faced them already in a friendly. Now get ready for a qualifying match down in Central America, down in the Caribbean, and just go for it, 1, 2, 3. It's not that hard. It's not that difficult. So that's why I'm saying what I'm saying. You know, listen, Jurgen Klinsmann is right, and he's also wrong. But it's not that difficult to say, you know what, let's remedy this. And I understand what the head coach of El Salvador is saying. He understands the situation. If we're going to improve as a nation, yes, we have to play the best talent in the world on whatever national team it is. The best of the best the U.S. needs to play. Yes, we're in CONCACAF. We're not in UEFA. There's a difference. I understand that. But in my eyes, in my opinion, football is football, soccer is soccer. It doesn't matter what confederation, it doesn't matter what country, it doesn't matter what type of tournament or confederational tournament you're getting involved in. You want to prove you're the best? You want to prove that you are one of the top national teams in the world? You want to show Mexico that they do not own this confederation, that they don't own a darn thing? You know what you do? You play anybody and everybody. And then if you do the right things, you know what's going to happen? I'll tell you what's going to happen. You will become one of the best countries in the world, and you can win a World Cup. That is the goal. That is the situation. And that's what I believe. Once again, Klinsmann was correct, and he was incorrect. But you know what? I got to tell you, it's not a bad idea what I just gave And obviously, it's just a wonderful thing to see one day when the U.S. does win a World Cup. Well, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, I got a good show for you tonight, of course. Joining me at 8:30 will be Mr. Sean Donahue from New England Soccer Today. We're going to talk a little bit more about Jurgen Klinsmann and his magic with the U.S. national team in this Gold Cup. Talk about that 0-0 draw between the U.S. Between RB and the Red Bulls and Toronto FC. But as we prepare for the show, we're going to have on very soon, as soon as he gives me a call, Mr. Matt Goschert, who does massive report covering the Columbus Crew and talking about their season. And hopefully we'll have him on right away. And as we get ready to talk, there he is right now. Of course, it's Matt Goschert from Massive Report covering the Columbus Crew. Matt, how are you and what's going on?
Doing all right. Personally, the club kind of depressing at this point, but me myself trying to keep my spirits up. How are you?
I'm doing all right, Matt. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for jumping in. And you know what? I gotta say, obviously, I can see it is a tough time over in Columbus, over at the state capitol, as the Crew are having inconsistent results. And I guess the question is, what is going on with Columbus? How is it you've made great summer window signings last year in Federico Higuain and Jaro Arrieta, and all of a sudden you're just not getting the results that you should be getting this season?
It's interesting because we're having very consistent results. They're just consistently bad. If you look at we've scored 23 goals this season. If you take away goals scored against DC and Toronto, DC and Chivas, who are the cellar dwellers, we're at 15, which puts us in second to last place, only behind DC as far as goals scored in the league, and that's a huge problem for Columbus. There was a conversation that we had actually on our podcast last night, and we were really talking about the conversation about the players sliding in and playing other people's positions when other players, I think it was Dominic Oduro, stated that, I can go in and fill in for Higuain when he makes a run and things along those lines. And that's all well and good, but there has to be some sort of marshal running that. And at this point, just with what we've seen from Robert Warzyha in the last few years, it's just not there.
And what is it about Robert Warzyha that somehow you're questioning his tactics, his formations, player acquisitions, sending players on loan, bringing players on loan? What is it about Warzyha that's just making Columbus Crew fans not feeling confident about their side?
Well, he's won one piece of silverware since he's come in as the head coach of Columbus, and that was the 2009 Supporters Shield, and that was essentially with the 2008 Cup winning squad. Since then, the results have just continued to dwindle. We haven't won a single playoff game with Warzyha at the helm. We didn't make the playoffs last year, and it doesn't look like we're going to make it this year. And the year before that, we barely backed in. And it's just a situation where I think giving him his own players and giving him his own, time to actually run the club, we're seeing what kind of a manager he really is. And while he was an absolute legend with the club, and I have nothing but respect for the man, it's to me and to a lot of other people, it's the writing's on the wall. And he's just not able to. He's a great assistant coach. He did a great job, running practice and assisting Siggy when Siggy was here, but he's not cut out for the head coach role. And I think that as time passes and you see more and more, this is Bobby's squad. There's only a couple of guys from the 2008 squad. Pretty much everybody else has been picked up since he took over, and he's just not able to to motivate them. He's not able to get them into the right positions. The joke last year was that the roster was so inconsistent that he was just pulling numbers out of a bingo hopper before the game started. And this year it's been a bit more consistent. But he's afraid to play. We've got two very potent strikers with Jairo Arrieta and Dominic Oduro, and we've got a guy who can set them up in Federico Higuain, and he's just absolutely afraid to play with two strikers in that are two guys that we signed to be strikers. It really hasn't happened this season, and you look at that, and that's it's troubling. It's really, really troubling, and this. This New England game, we didn't get a shot on goal, I want to say, until about the 60th minute. And that's, you're not going to win a whole lot of games getting two shots on goal and not getting your first one until well into the second half. It's just the balls aren't going to bounce your way if you keep doing that. And New England ended up, putting together a pretty good goal for their first one and then just a flub off of Chad Marshall. Stealing the ball away and sniping a second one, and all credit to New England for taking advantage of what they needed to win that game. We were I was talking to a lot of people around the 85th, 89th minute, and we're like, well, we'll be lucky to get out of here with a point, and we would have been lucky to get out of there with a point because New England still had a game plan, once the clock hit 90 and Columbus didn't.
Yeah, absolutely. I can understand your frustrations. Obviously, the Hunt family still runs and operates the Columbus Crew along with FC Dallas. Now, I follow you. I follow your partner through Twitter, Massive Report as well, and especially a couple of other Hudson Street Hooligans as well on Twitter. It sounds like everyone wants the Hunts out of Columbus. It sounds like even you're getting fed up with how this club is being run, if you can explain that.
Well, I personally don't have anything against the Hunts per se. I don't, mm-hmm. I'll make a joke here or there about Clark or about one of the other Hunts, but their dad is the only reason we have a club, and their dad's the only reason that the majority of, in my opinion, the majority of the soccer specific stadiums in the United States exist. So I have nothing but respect for the Hunts and the legacy that they've brought to Major League Soccer. Now, on the other hand, we're the only club that's owned by a group that owns multiple clubs. It's FC Dallas and us are the only clubs with multiple owners. And you look at what Kansas City's been able to do. A former HSG team that got involved and really interested local ownership. That's really interested in the market. And my biggest credit to the Hunts and what we keep hearing from them is that they don't plan on selling Columbus until they can find that person in Columbus. They've said over and over again that they don't have any plans of selling it to somebody from anywhere else that might think about moving the club once they get their hands on it. And so I give the Hunts a lot of credit for that. I think that with the stadium and with the deals that they have on the stadium, I don't know if the Crew necessarily are making money. I don't think they're losing money hand over fist, but I don't think that the club is necessarily profitable. But with the stadium and the fact that they own it outright and the fact that all the events there and concession revenues and all the other revenues are theirs, and they're not paying an operating partner and they're not paying a lease, and there's no they're not in debt to anyone as far as that goes. I think that it's a not incredibly profitable, but a mildly profitable situation in Columbus for them when you look at all of that. So I think that they do have the ability to kind of take their time on this and find the right person. And I think that bodes well for Columbus. Other people, they're especially upset with the trade that happened with one of our international spots going to Dallas for essentially, I think it was a fourth round draft pick, which isn't really a whole lot. But I don't really think we were going to fill that fourth round that third international spot that we traded away this year. The empty one, that is. And so we still have a couple of empty international spots if they decide to make a move. So I don't know if that was necessarily nepotism, which some people have called out. I think it's more, just, you know, you use it or you lose it, and why not get something out of it rather than nothing?
Just to go with the ownership situation again, obviously you have the Columbus Blue Jackets in the National Hockey League at Nationwide Arena. The AAA affiliate of the Cleveland Indians, the former Yankee affiliate, I should say, in the Columbus Clippers. But
also,
I have
also
to because,
former Washington Nationals affiliate. Just putting that out there for like 1 year.
That's fine. No, that's fine too. Do you know if there's been any rumors that maybe they've found interest to running the Crew? Because I know the Clippers are the oldest, say, professional sports franchise in the city, and then the Crew came second, and the Blue Jackets came third. Has there been any interest from them, of that ownership group, so those two ownership groups that possibly want to invest with the Crew and MLS?
I don't think so. I know that, for example, Lamar actually tried to buy into the Blue Jackets when they first came in, and had a completely different arena plan that was going to go into a different neighborhood and really was very much more the Crew Stadium model rather than the public financing model, which is what ended up going with the McConnells, the family that owns the Blue Jackets. Mm-hmm. I know that, for example, last offseason, the Franklin County had to utilize quite a bit of the revenue from the new casino that just opened here in order to buy Nationwide Arena from Nationwide. The deal essentially, as I read it, was that Nationwide was not providing any stadium naming rights money to the Blue Jackets because Nationwide owned the arena. So Nationwide also wanted to get rid of the arena, and the Blue Jackets weren't making a whole lot of money. So what they did was the Franklin County purchased the arena with casino tax revenue, and then Nationwide, because they were let out of that liability of operating and owning that arena, agreed to buy stadium naming rights from the Blue Jackets for, I think, I want to say it was 20 years, which is kind of gotten the Blue Jackets off of that Phoenix Coyotes and a couple other team bubble where there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, a whole lot of certainty whether or not they were going to stay. So I don't think the Blue Jackets ownership group is necessarily thinking about, you know, divesting their properties anytime soon because they just got a pretty big bailout from the county. The Clippers ownership group, I don't really know a whole lot about them, quite honestly. It's kind of one of those things. I know there's a lot of people that, you know, there's a large group of people that are in that ownership group, but I've not heard anything about the Clippers or any of their owners being interested. It's gonna be a weird one. I mean, it's you know, if we can find somebody who's local, I don't know if I know who that is yet, quite honestly.
Right. Well, we'll see what happens. And of course, this question goes to the club at the moment. You are 6 points behind Houston for the last playoff spot. Obviously, there's still plenty of time. The summer window is probably open already. What do you think the Crew need to at least fight for one of those fourth or fifth place spots to get into the playoffs? And do you think they can make another summer signing splash?
I don't think they can, quite honestly. The cap room that we have quite right now is slim to none, and they would have to get rid of somebody. They have a lot of money tied up with Glauber Bertie, who's injured. He tore his ACL. He's out for the season. A lot of money tied up with Eddie Gavin. Same situation. Also tore his ACL, and he's out. Both in U.S. Open Cup games, which was kind of interesting. Mm. But there's not a whole lot of wiggle room. So they would have to lose a piece in order to gain a piece. We've had a few conversations about just interesting thoughts as far as that goes, but the biggest thing is that, you know, right now the offense seems to key around Higuain, which is a good thing, because Higuain, when he's on and when he's doing what he's supposed to do, is definitely an effective playmaker. But the problem is a lot of our opponents know that the offense keys around Federico Higuain, and so having somebody else that can be kind of another playmaker and another option to take that assuredness from the other team away from, well, the ball's going to go to Higuain and then there's going to be distribution. I think that may help. I think that you know, now that we've got Arrieta back from international duty for a while, I think that's going to help as well, because he was playing with Costa Rica for all of Gold Cup and the World Cup qualifiers so far. And obviously we'll lose him again in September, but I think we've got a little bit of time for him and Oduro to get a little more used to each other. But I'm really, like, the biggest thing is we've had so many pieces go missing. I don't know who you could put up that would attract or at least free up enough cap room so that we could get somebody that we would need in order to make a push. I hate to be this pessimistic, but I don't think that there's necessarily a silver lining on this season.
All right. Well, listen, take care. Good luck with the rest of the season, and let's see what happens. So thanks a lot for joining us, Matt.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem. It's Matt Goshen from Massive Report covering the Columbus Crew. And, of course, we have another team that's also looking to get into the playoffs. And I believe we have Mr. Sean Donahue on the line from New England Soccer Today. Sean, are you there?
Hey, yeah. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Thanks for joining us today, Matt. Sean. You know, Sean, the New England Revolution have gone through a lot this year, obviously. AJ Soares, with his situation, I forgot what he has again, disease. Hopefully he'll be okay and coming back soon. I understand he was ready to train again. Also, of course, what happened in Boston with the Marathon Bombers. And
terrible.
You know, what happened then, and of course, but it sounds like that you had a decent run in the Open Cup. You got to the quarterfinals, and you lost, unfortunately, in the to DC United. But so far, what have you seen that the Revolution have done? Like, whatever improvement there has been, what's been going on?
Well, you know, since the quarterfinals, when we lost in the Open Cup, you know, we've really just been focusing on where to collect as a team. You know, there's a lot that we've been doing around the city and stuff. And instead of getting back to work right away, we want to clear our heads and just remember what it was in the DC United game that we lost and why we lost, and kind of just take it from there, regroup, recoup, and then start the season over.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you got a lot of things going on for you, and a lot of things going on with the Revolution. I guess you have Jose Goncalves, who had a great big victory there in their last match, a great win for the Revolution against, pardon me, I just want to get your schedule up here real quick, against Columbus. You won 2-0, and a big, big goal. What's about with this Crew team and Jay Heaps? And, of course, they have a no-they-don't-say-die attitude.
Yeah, I mean, they were a tough opponent this season. But, I think we won 2-0, like you said, against them. And, again, you know, I credit all our wins just to just the way we play as a team.
Yeah, absolutely. But what else is going with New England? Is there any rumors coming around that they might be doing something in the summer window? Is there something going on?
As of right now, no. I mean, again, we have a couple guys healing from injuries, a couple ACLs. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
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 How you doing, Sean? How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Sorry about that.
Apparently there's an imposter out there.
I don't know. How is it that you're an imposter? You have an imposter out there.
I'm just that famous.
I guess so. All right, so I guess we're going to have to do this again. I don't mind doing this again. It's okay. But so
that was weird.
Let me. Yeah, that was weird. That's strange that you got in, all of a sudden there's someone who wants to pretend to be like you. Wow, look at that.
Apparently.
Yeah. So anyway, so let's try this again then. So Sean, how are you feeling about this Revolution side since the start of the year?
Well, it's tricky to say because you look at this team and they've had stretches where they've looked really, really good. They've looked like a playoff contender, and they've had stretches where they've looked really bad. And this past week has been one of the stretches where they haven't looked so good. They got the win over Columbus. I don't know if you happen to see that game. That was one of not a game of soccer that you'd want to show to anybody, certainly
right.
For the first 90 minutes. That was a horrible game, actually. I didn't know what I was going to write about it until those two goals in stoppage time. But that was a bad
exactly.
performance despite the win. You know, I hope they don't look at that game and see this is, you know, see that as something that was a positive, because overall that game was a negative. So
yeah.
I mean that there, and the game before it too, where they had the goal and they had the lead at halftime, but they really weren't playing that well, and then it really fell apart when Stephen McCarthy went out injured. I think that's a key there. He's been playing so well with along with Jose Goncalves. They've looked very good together in the back. They've been a great pairing, and the defense has done so well because of those two. And when McCarthy went out, they didn't look so good in the Colorado game. They gave up two goals right after he went out. And against Columbus, they certainly should have given up some goals, but Columbus apparently has some real troubles finishing and completing passes in the final third, because that was a game that they should have won with the control of that game that they had for most of the match.
Well, you know, I got to say, when you Jose Goncalves, he scored that big goal to get the that big stoppage time action going in second half. And, of course, you know, it sounds like he's one of those players that you really needed to get to at least get a victory.
Oh, yeah. He's been huge for this team. I think I would argue he's the MVP of this team so far. He probably should have been in the All-Star game, of course, after everyone was saying he was an All-Star stub. He had, you know, his worst game of the season against Colorado, where he scored that own goal and was probably partially responsible for the first goal as well. But yeah, he's just been very steady all season. The team has had some promising talent at center back, but they brought him in. He's been a real veteran presence. His positioning is great. You know, he's a leader back there. He took over the captaincy. He's just done an amazing job back there. I think he did better than anyone expected. You know, the Revolution are a team known for having a lot of success with their international signings, but with him, they certainly had a home run. He's just been fantastic in the defense, I think better than anyone could have expected. And it's interesting, too, to see him try to get forward sometimes as well. You could tell, particularly in that Columbus game, that he wanted to get involved in the attack. He wanted to kind of make up for that own goal he had in the last game, and, of course, he ended up scoring the game-winning goal. So, you know, that was a good thing for him to do. But he's just been a huge game-changer for the Revolution in the back line, and it's part of the reason why their defense has been at least statistically, one of the best in the league.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, going about what's been going on in the season, obviously, I mean, I had you on the preview MLS seasons, you weren't sure what was going to happen with this team. Obviously, you have the Kevin Alston, I believe he's the one who's not playing this year because of the, what was it that he has again?
Leukemia, actually, but he's
leukemia.
Actually back now, and he could be playing in the next game. So that's great to see him back. It was certainly an emotionally tough for the team, but it's great to see him back now. And he, since when he was at right back last season, he wasn't looking so great. He came to the team. He was very promising. People actually thought he could be a national team player. His play kind of didn't improve the way people wanted it to, but he made that switch over to left back last season, and he started playing, you know, a whole lot better again. And he started the season at left back looking good, and so getting him back is a big thing for the Revs. They do have Chris Tierney back there, who's done a good job, but Alston certainly has a lot more speed than Tierney, and Tierney can struggle with fast wingers, so that'll be a big help for the Revs if he can come back and return to the form that he was showing before he had to go on the disabled list.
Yeah, absolutely, and of course, everything that happened in Boston, we already know, you know, that the bombing and the marathon, and of course, what happened over at Red Bull Arena, you know, getting through a tragedy like that. And right now, it seems the Revolution, they seem to be on a positive way of moving forward. And just, you know, taking a look at the standings in the East, you're only 2 points behind Houston for the last playoff spot. In a certain way, you are on the outside looking in, but New England could still find a way to go through and get into a playoff spot.
Well, and if you look at their schedule too, the Revolution actually have one of the easiest schedules in the East. I know I did the breakdown in an article a few weeks ago, and the Revolution did have the easiest schedule of any of the playoff contenders by a significant margin, actually. But the problem with the Revs is that they play these teams that they should be, and that seems to be the games they have the hardest, you know, the most trouble actually winning when they're playing, you know, a DC United or a Toronto sometimes. They struggle in those games when those are the ones you think they'd win easily. And there's a ton of those games on the schedule. You know, if they can figure out how to beat these bad teams, they should make the playoffs. But, you know, that's a big if because so far you haven't seen that. They got the draw with Chivas. They lost to DC United. Or they drew DC United and then they lost to them in the Open Cup. But, you know, overall they've had their struggles with, you know, some pretty bad teams. You know, Columbus, similarly, they got the win there. But, I mean, that wasn't a game that they should have won based on, you know, the first 90 minutes. So if they can figure that out, and they're playing DC United again coming up this weekend, if they can get a win there, you know, that could certainly be an indication that this team could make the playoffs because every game the rest of the season is against the Eastern Conference opposition. So their destiny is certainly in their own hands. They have a lot of winnable games in the schedule. The problem is, you know, and it's not just this year either. The past few years when they've played bad teams, you know, they've played poorly themselves. So if they can figure out a way to, you know, not have letdowns against these poor teams, then this is certainly a schedule that would be, you know, conducive to making the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. I think right now Jay Heaps is, I think with what he's had to work with so far, I think he's done a very good job getting those results when he needed it, especially in the Open Cup against a Red Bull side that he was able to get his players to win in Harvard. Then, of course, unfortunately, you lose to DC United in the quarterfinals. But still, though, I still think for the Revolution, it seems that they got some upsides going. Now, I have to ask you this question. Something going on with Jerry Benson where he didn't report to Honduras for his national team. Did you, you know, for the qualifier against the U.S., did you know anything about this? Do you know what the reasons were for that?
Well, he was benched. I forget exactly which game it was. He was benched for one of Honduras' qualifiers for Roger Rojas, I believe. And he, I'm not sure exactly what was said, but he was not happy about that. He got in an argument with the coach. I don't know if he was sent home or if he chose to leave, but, you know, it might have been that he was sent home because the coach wasn't very happy with his attitude at that point. I know since then the coach has said, of Honduras, has said if he wants to come back, he has to apologize to the team, he has to apologize to the coach, and he has to apologize to Rojas, who was the player that replaced him. So, you know, I'm assuming he had some kind of, you know, argument with Rojas or said something negative about Rojas, which obviously isn't a very good thing to do with one of your teammates, and he came back from that. And I mean, he hasn't been playing well with the Revolution, frankly, so I don't think he should be too surprised that he got dropped from the starting lineup for Honduras because his club form has been pretty poor. They spent a lot of money on him, and he's certainly been a bust so far.
Yeah, it sounds like it, and hopefully things can turn around for New England and hopefully for Benson, and he can go out there and do what he's supposed to be doing, scoring goals and giving the Revolution at least an attempt to get 3 points. Obviously, we're in the summer window right now. The transfer window's open. What do you think New England needs to do? Do you think that they have to go out and bring a player over to improve what's going on, or do you think there's enough already for this team to at least make a push into a playoff position?
I think there's a few question marks. I mean, Juan Aguadelo, certainly, if he gets healthy, he makes a big difference. When he first came here, they were playing great. Him and Fagundes were combining well. The whole offense really seemed to be clicking. And then he went down injured, and the whole, you know, the whole offense kind of fell apart. Bengtsson, you know, they tried to put him back in there, wasn't working. Chad Barrett, you know, he's been okay at times, but Aguadelo certainly has been a game changer when he's healthy. So I don't know the severity of his injury. I don't know how soon he's going to be back. But if he's out long term, then I think that forward is definitely an area they need to address because Jerry Bengtsson certainly isn't getting the job done, and I think he's been here long enough now to, you know, to realize that that's probably not going to work. Chad Barrett, like I said, he's serviceable, but I think they need more than him up top. So, you know, that's a questionable area there. I think we talked about fullback earlier. If Kevin Austin comes back, then that kind of takes care of that problem. There's some competition back there and some depth because right now they have no depth at fullback with Kevin Austin out. When you know, when Chris Tierney gets injured or Andrew Farrell gets injured or suspended, they have to put Darius Barnes back there, and he can fill in, but he certainly looks more comfortable in the center than out on the wing. So that's a problem area. I mean, he's put Ryan Guy back there as well, a midfielder, and I don't think that's worked out too well when he's done that. So that's an area to look at, you know, especially if if Austin doesn't come back 100%, but hopefully he does. And then the other real question mark for me is the central defensive midfield position. They spent a lot of money on Khalifa Cisse. He's their highest paid player, and he's just not playing. I think a lot of expectations were for him to come in here, you know, kind of replace Shaari Joseph because they didn't find a replacement for him last year when he left. And, you know, he hasn't been playing. He played in the Open Cup. He did okay in the Open Cup, but he hasn't been able to find a way into the starting lineup. Scott Caldwell has done a serviceable job there. Certainly, he's been good. But I think he's, you know, he's still a rookie. He's still, I mean, that's an area I think they could improve upon. You have Clyde Sims, who, you know, again, can play there, but Clyde Sims really doesn't add anything to the offense. You know, he'll get the job done defensively, cutting off passes, and he'll play safe passes, but, you know, he's not someone that's going to play a pass that will spring it forward through the defense or anything like that. I think you'd hope that was what you get from Khalifa Cisse, and you didn't. You know, Scott Caldwell can do some of those things, but, you know, I still think he's developing and he could benefit from, you know, a veteran presence there to help out. So that's an area I think they might want to address. But really, I think they have a pretty strong squad. It's just a question of finding consistency, you know, finding a lineup that works. Offensively, like I said, they do need to have that main striker that Agudelo was when he was healthy, but nobody else has really been able to be. But, you know, otherwise, I think they have a lot of depth this year, which is, you know, certainly an improvement over last season and the past few seasons where that's been a big issue. And, you know, offensively, they have Kellen Rowe, who's looked really good this year. Diego Fagundes is really coming to his own this season after, you know, not doing quite as much last year as maybe you had hoped after his first season. But, you know, he's been fantastic. I think he was actually, you know, a decent candidate for an all-star spot the way he'd been playing. Like I said, Rowe's been good off the bench. Juan Toja is another question mark where sometimes you see some good stuff from him. He scored a, you know, free kick goal the other day, but he's another guy that I think has been a little bit of a bust as well. Like Bengtsson, he hasn't done as much as you would have wanted, and certainly he's making a decent amount of money. So, you know, he's another question mark, but they have, you know, other guys that play that spot. Lee Wynn, who, again, I also don't think has been as good as last year, and I think they can get more out of him going forward. You know, he's another player that you can get a lot out of. And Sayer Sen, who's still working his way back to 100% from his ACL surgery and has been looking better. So, you know, I think the offense can just keep getting better. If they can find that forward, if Agudelo gets healthy, or if they can find somebody else to take that spot, that's really the key for them going forward.
Yeah, sure thing. Let me give you a couple of extra minutes because I had an imposter on for no reason, so sorry about that. But I want to talk about the website, New England Soccer Today. How's it going, and how strong is the readership of your site? How many hits are you getting? Is it going very well?
Yeah, it's going very well. We've gotten more readers on board all the time. We try to get some, you know, other writers for other outlets in New England to occasionally contribute as well. So get a lot of different voices on there. Obviously, Brian O'Connell from ESPN is, you know, one of the founders along with me. So that's been working out great. We also have the writer from the Boston Globe now, Julian Cardillo, who writes for us. So we have some content from him as well. We try to cover not just the Revolution, but also the lower division teams, the Breakers, the national team. So. And we have been getting a lot of hits, surprisingly, more hits than I would have expected. But I think the site is doing really well. I think we kind of have the, I'd call us the top site for New England soccer right now, which is something that we're pretty proud of, and certainly how it's been doing hits-wise. So it's been great, and I think we continue to add more writers and continue to add more content and try to switch things up. We've got a few ideas in the work. We might be changing the design a little bit going forward, so, and adding a few new features. So I think the site's doing very well.
All right. Well, listen, thank you very much for joining me. I apologize for that little problem, and hopefully that guy will never show his voice ever again.
Yeah, it was a strange one, but thanks for having me on.
It was weird. I just don't understand. I thought you switched your – I thought you changed your Skype name or something. Like, okay, maybe this is him. And he said it's you, and I'm like, all right. And like, no. I'm like, uh-oh.
I just called in when I had heard him when I heard your first guest wrapping up, and then I heard that guy pick up, and I was like, oh, it's interesting. But I wouldn't think there'd be an imposter for me, but yeah, you never know. It's a new world out there.
Never know. Exactly. I'm gonna have to hunt him down. I'm gonna probably have to interrogate him anyway. Well, listen, have a good night, Sean. Thanks for coming on again, and I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. That's the real Sean Donahue from New England Soccer Today as he comes on the show to discuss what's going on with the Revolution. You know, it's really interesting how some people want to come on this show and they have no real business but to cause trouble for no reason. You know, I don't do this to other shows on Blog Talk Radio. I don't do this to anyone's podcasts. I don't do this to anyone's, you know, other streaming shows. Look, I listen, I show respect, and off I go. That's all it is. But apparently, someone that wants to call themselves a sports fanatic, and unfortunately, he no longer has a Blog Talk Radio account as a listener. You know, this is the unfortunate things that happen sometimes. You know, I didn't want to talk about this. I never really wanted to talk about this because this guy had to pretend he's Sean Donahue for no reason. And, you know, it really bothers and it hurts. You know, this is a serious show, everyone. You know, there's barely any shows talking about soccer as a whole. There's no shows talking about the game from an American perspective. I mean, granted, you've got SiriusXM for their counterattack show, but, I mean, you know, and supposedly, you know, what's going on with NASN and how they're doing their job as a 24-hour soccer internet radio station with live and archive stuff. But, you know, I try to make this a serious show because you guys want the best content possible, and here comes somebody that wants to jump on and make, you know, just assume that he knows what he's talking about and he doesn't know a damn thing. Or comes into the chat room and he wants to start, you know, what? Calling me out for no reason? I'm not going to worry about this. I'm not going to worry about this piece of crap. No. Why should I allow a jerk like this to ruin a great show? And you know what? It just makes no sense. Just makes absolutely no sense. And he probably must have, how you call it, hijacked the chat room. It's really a shame. It's just really a shame. And I feel bad for you guys who are listening live. I will feel bad for you guys that will be listening to the archive version. And I feel bad for you guys in the chat room that had to go through all this. I'm sorry about that. I really am. And I want to apologize. I want to apologize to all the people who are legitimate listeners here, like Rob Bagalayos, like, of course, Sean Donahue's on here. And, of course, who else did this person piss off, which I apologize for, besides me? Yeah. To the last listener who came on, the last listener who left the chat room, I apologize. Try to make sure this doesn't ever happen again. It's the wrong thing to do. I apologize for that, and hopefully this will not happen again, and I'll make sure that everything is A-okay. So, once again, I apologize for the situation. I hope it won't happen again. And we can get through and we can just go on and continue what's going on here. And since I had to go and say this, unfortunately, I didn't want to, but it looks like I'm going to have to continue saying it. So, you know, not a problem, Rob. Not a problem at all. Let's move on to what I'm going to say. I was planning to say, pardon me, but, you know, it's just one of those things where you have to see what's happening and what's going on. And I believe it was a Mary Lou, I believe her name was. And if you were offended by what this person said during the chat room, I apologize for that. Hope that everything is okay. And what I'm going to do, guys, is I'm going to turn off the chat room for a minute. I'm going to restart it so we can have some, you know, I can definitely bring it back on here. Don't worry. I'm just restarting the chat room, and you can come back in. Good, 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 good. And it looks like we are not going to have the rest of that crap on here. I know, Rob. It's just weird how some people, they just want to come on, they want to troll, they want to treat people like crap, they want to prove, you know, I don't know what they're trying to prove, to be honest. You know, it's just a bunch of idiots Nothing you can do. And I just don't know, man. I just don't know. I don't know why people do what they do. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's stupid. But what are you going to do? So unfortunately, you're going to get one of those types of people to come on. So if this just wanted to say once again for that Mary Lou person, I apologize. And hopefully, oh, thank you, Rob. I know. I try. I do my best. And unfortunately, you will get people doing this. You will get people doing this sort of shit. I can say the word because we're not FCC regulation here. But once again, what are you going to do? It really bothers me, and it really, really hurts me that I have to have a numbskull wasting not only your time but my time when I'm trying to do these types of shows. So we'll see what happens, and, you know, we'll just have to wait and see if this guy ever calls in again, uses his Skype. So we'll have to wait and see what the situation will be. But let us not dwindle on this. I'm going to probably have to take out 15 minutes out of the Red Bull Hour, because what I really want to talk about, again, is Jurgen Klinsmann, because I want to talk about this Gold Cup team that he has assembled. And this is what I want to say. You know, when you talk about Jurgen Klinsmann and the job he has done in 2013 with the U.S. national team, I mean, this was a situation that you were thinking, what's he going to do when he doesn't have the regulars for qualifying involved in this Gold Cup tournament? Now, granted, it does have Landon Donovan. It does have a bunch of players that probably will never, ever see, the national team on a regular basis. But if I can just say how awesome this team has been in this Gold Cup tournament, it has been fantastic. It's been an absolute fantastic everything that we have seen from the U.S. I mean, look at this roster. We all know what Nick Raimondo can do. Obviously, you lose Hercules Gomez because he has to return to Club Tijuana. Michael Orozco, Matt Beisler comes in. Clarence Goodson has done a decent job. Edgar Castillo has now has been doing a great job. DeMarcus Beasley, of course, is doing both. He's done fantastic. Beckerman's done fantastic. Joe Corona is in the future for the national team. Mikhail Diskaru is in the future for the national team. Stuart Holden, you're happy for him that he's finally getting back. Jose Francisco Torres doing a fantastic job. Landon Donovan has answered the call. Chris Wondolowski has looked fantastic. Eddie Johnson comes in. Alan Gordon comes in now. Will Bruin, we haven't really seen much of him. But, and of course, Oguchi Onyewu has done some decent stuff, you know, he was injured and everything. But let me just say this. If this is a B team for the USA, Jurgen Klinsmann's magic has been absolutely spot on. Jurgen Klinsmann's magic has been unbelievable. And Sean Donahue has remained in the chat room, and I thank you for that, Sean. Thanks for staying with us. You know what? This is the deepest team we've ever had. Now, let's be honest here. Let's just be honest. There were question marks coming into qualifying, but at the same time, question marks after that Gold Cup loss in the finals against Mexico over at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena when the USA had a 2-0 lead and losing it to Mexico 4-2. So everything that has come Mexico's way, winning the under 17 World Cup at home, their Olympic team winning gold in London, there were question marks about who is coming up through the ranks of this national team. Who is coming up through these ranks for the United States? And even though there are questions about what happened with the under 20 World Cup in Turkey and how they went 3 and out, you can definitely say that the senior level, the talent is coming, the talent is here, and look at once again what's going on. Mexico lost to Panama in their first group stage match of this Gold Cup 2-1. Yes, they did defeat Martinique, and yes, they did defeat Canada 2-0. Martinique, they defeated them 3-1. The quarterfinal match against Trinidad and Tobago, they did nothing till the 84th minute, and they could have easily lost that game too. And now you have Mexico not doing so well. They're getting results, but was there any meaning behind the results? Well, they won, of course. But did it make you feel comfortable? If you watch the Gold Cup on Fox Soccer with Mariano Trujillo, the Mexican correspondent for the guys at Fox Soccer, he's not feeling confident about what Mexico is doing. He's not feeling confident on these results. And De La Torre's job is probably on the line. You're facing Panama again in the semifinals. Would it be interesting? All of a sudden, Panama comes out of the blue and defeats Mexico again when it really, really counts. A semifinal match going into the final at Chicago. Could it be the Panamanians? We don't know. That's why they play the game, and that's tomorrow night. But for the United States and what they have done, a bad, I would have to say this. I don't think they did well in the semifinal round of qualifying. I felt they should have handled Antigua and Barbuda a lot better. I'll take the road draw down in Guatemala. The loss in Jamaica was terrible. The home win against Jamaica was okay. They were behind against Guatemala at home in the final match of the semifinal round, but they did win 4-1. But that road game at Antigua and Barbuda, they had a lead, lost it, they regained it late in the second half, and they won. Since the loss at Honduras, the U.S. in the snow defeats Costa Rica 1-0, and that's a crapshoot because of the snow. They go into the Azteca, and they come out with a 0-0 draw. Then they have the magical June. 3 matches, 9 out of 9. And here they are in the Gold Cup with a B roster. Maybe a B+, because Landon Donovan has once again shown he is one of the best players the U.S. has ever had. And you've heard me talk about Landon Donovan. This guy is ready to return for the qualifiers. Whether you use him as a starting 11 or coming off the bench, that's up to Klinsmann. I'm not going to say anything, because Donovan had to re-earn his spot, and he has. He needs to go to his teammates and say, guys, I'm not taking this for granted anymore. I'm ready to fight with you. I'm ready to go to Brazil with you. I'm ready. Let's move on. But look at what Klinsmann has done. When did you ever see in any match, whether it be a friendly, whether it be the Gold Cup, a World Cup qualifier, maybe even a World Cup match itself, when have you ever seen this team from 90 minutes, they fought, They attacked. They just basically went wave after wave after wave against El Salvador. The only two hiccups in the match against El Salvador to advance into the semifinals was the penalty kick goal by Zelaya and the start of the second half. That's it. They did a job against Belize. They had an opening hiccup against Cuba, but they took care of business in the second half. You knew there was going to be a tough match against Costa Rica in the final group stage to win the group, and they did so with the Breck Shea goal. Jurgen Klinsmann right now has been spot on. Jurgen Klinsmann right now has been unbelievable with not just World Cup qualifying, but in this Gold Cup. And now they're in Texas, Dallas, Texas, at Dallas Cowboys Stadium for the semifinal round, or excuse me, the semifinal match against Honduras, who upsetted Costa Rica. And you know what? It's been absolutely brilliant. Many, many questions came about the whole Landon Donovan sabbatical, and Rob said it correctly. He knew how to handle it. But at the same time, he was sending Donovan a message. He was telling Landon Donovan, we don't need you right now. You took your sabbatical. You're going to have to re-earn your spot. That's why I'm going to put you into the Gold Cup. That's why, Landon, Jurgen Klinsmann did what he did. He wanted to rediscover the fire that is hidden inside of you. And you have done a magnificent job, not just taking penalties for the club, or should I say for the national team, excuse me, taking penalties for the national team, doing well with the Galaxy again, but how you distribute the ball against Costa Rica, against Belize, Cuba, and now El Salvador. Jurgen Klinsmann did well with Operation Cakewalk on Belize and Cuba. He knew it was going to be a tough match against Costa Rica, and he gets a Breck Shea goal late in the second half. And then this El Salvadorian match. Who would have thunk it? Who would have thunk it? Here comes Eddie Johnson, new do and all, great dye job. He just walks onto the field. It's a half jog, half fast walk. And as soon as that corner, that short corner was delivered by Donovan, here comes Eddie Johnson and he smacks it in. Great substitute by Jurgen Klinsmann. And you know what? It's just absolutely fantastic. And I gotta say this. Do you feel confident now about what's gonna move forward for the U.S. national team? Do you feel confident that, let's be honest, they're in double-digit in points in qualifying. Top of the group with 13. Costa Rica's in second with 11. Mexico is in third with 8. And then Panama. And then you have Jamaica in dead last. And Honduras, not far away. Mexico, 8. Panama, 7. Honduras, 6. If Mexico continues to falter at home, 2 home matches remaining in September and October. Could you imagine if Mexico doesn't qualify? Now, I understand they're going to find a way to do it. There's still plenty of matches. But here's the thing. Honduras is going to the Azteca on Friday, September the 6th. The U.S. are going to be in Costa Rica on the same day. Then Tuesday, September the 10th, Mexico and the U.S. will fight in Columbus, Ohio. Could you imagine if Mexico does not even get a point in both games? Could you imagine if I can see Honduras. I can see Honduras stealing some points. Not one, three. And the U.S., if they draw in Costa Rica, it's not the worst thing in the world, to be honest with you. Because what would happen if the U.S. does get a point in Costa Rica, Mexico gets nothing at home, and then they have to come to Columbus, come on American soil, USA, Mexico, Columbus Crew Stadium. And then, all of a sudden, it all falls apart. That's what I'm talking about here. The job that Klinsmann has done has been unbelievable. And here's the funny thing, too. Now, I don't understand Spanish, but the former head coach of Chivas USA, Jose Luis Sanchez Sola, El Chelis, you know what he says about De La Torre and Klinsmann? Basically, he said, Klinsmann is brilliant. De La Torre is not. And that's a problem. That's a problem for Mexico if De La Torre is not going to deliver the goods like he did a few years ago. 2 years ago, to be precise. 2 years ago, De La Torre got a Gold Cup victory over the United States. They were down 2-0, tied it up 2-2, and then all of a sudden, 4-2 in the second half and 4-2 final. That was it. But once again, we could always think about it. We could always dream about it. But to be fair, they got to play the game. And this coming Wednesday night, tomorrow night, on Fox Soccer, 7 o'clock Eastern time, USA will be taking on Honduras for a trip to Chicago and the 2013 Gold Cup final. Later on, Mexico will be taking on Panama in a group stage revenge match to get into the final. And here's the other thing, too. Join me tomorrow here, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, for your Gold Cup preview show. And then, of course, join us after the match for the post-game show. We will move the start time back if this match will go into extra time and or penalties. So be ready for that. Be ready for that. And I'm telling you right now, I got to tell you right now, this has been an unbelievable thing that we have seen from this national team right now. I have to go back to Bruce Arena because I think that Bruce Arena found a way to start the tactics and the attitude to get the program going where it should have been going in the first place. There was a hiccup with Bob Bradford, but I'm telling you right now, Jurgen Klinsmann has gotten this program into a position where I don't think we've ever seen before. It's not just attitude. It's not just sticking your chest out. It's called swagger. And he's brought everything into one, not just with the senior team, the A team for qualifying, but he's brought it with these players, B team as well. And this situation is unbelievable. It is fantastic. It is awesome. I love every minute of what I'm seeing from our national team, and this has been brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. The United States, the U.S. men's national team, is starting to show what Klinsmann was imagining all along for what they're going to do. And if U.S. Soccer is going to ask Klinsmann to remain during another cycle, I would never go against that idea. This has been awesome. This has been brilliant. I mean, I was flabbergasted. Agreed, this is against El Salvador. But the point is, you have to face a team. You really have to face a team to know what the heck is going on here. And it shouldn't matter how low in the standings or in the rankings they are or how high they are. The point is simple. This team right now is flying, and they're looking fantastic. They are looking brilliantly, and I'm happy, very, very happy, that our national team is doing very well. I'm telling you right now, I'm just excited about it. I'm very excited about it. I love it. It's wonderful. And I'm just, happy it's been going on. Very, very happy it's been going on.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about some other things now as we talk about the New York Red Bulls. They go up to Toronto this past Saturday to take on Toronto FC. And you know what? Burn the tape. Burn the tape. Destroy whatever you can. Get the flamethrower. Rip it up. Destroy it. Because, let's be honest, that was probably the worst performance on the road I have seen in a very, very long time. I mean, I know some of you are probably going to say, well, the 4th of July game wasn't a piece of cake either, which is true. But when you're facing a team in Toronto FC who is basically sharing the bottom of the Eastern Conference with DC United, they have gone through another roster purge again. They have sent off Darren O'Day, their captain, ended that contract as he's finding employment somewhere else. You know what that means, folks? It means that there's something wrong once again with the front office. And you have Kevin Payne, who is the general manager, coming from DC United, a team that's had its share of success. You have Tim Leiwicki as president of the Los Angeles Galaxy as well as the general manager. He has seen success. So you would have to assume that that situation, Toronto has in place people that are going to succeed. Now, I know it's not going to happen overnight. I know it's not going to happen overnight that Toronto's going to be a strong side coming in here. But let's be honest right now. That should have been 3 points on the road. They won it 2-1 the last time they visited BMO Field. And to be honest, it should have been another 3 points at BMO Field. That's the truth. They should have had 3 points in Toronto. And you know what happened? They messed it up. After a solid 15 minutes, the Red Bulls should have had a cakewalk. That's the truth.
And the Red Bulls, honestly, should have put in at least 5 to 6 goals, 3 in each half, against this team from Toronto. And the thing is that it really bothers me to see what's going on here. Now, some are saying, they're not listening to Petke. And I don't think that's the case. I just think they had a very, very bad game. Even Petke was unhappy with what he saw. And he said so on the halftime report. And you know what? You know me. Courtesy of MSG Network, Mike Petke said this to Tina Servacio at the halftime report.
Mike, Toronto's getting their opportunities, not finishing, but we want to see more of the second half so that the guys aren't giving up that much space.
I want to see a freaking effort, to be honest with you, Tina. I mean, this is, I'm not happy right now at all. Pathetic to me. Pathetic. I don't know why we came up from customs, came to Toronto, should have stayed home.
Well, what?
And that's Mike Petke at half. Could you imagine? I mean, you know, you prepare to play against one of the lesser sides, probably one of the more weaker sides in MLS, and you get that. You get that first half performance. And then a second half where it was even worse. Now, let me say this about Toronto FC. I know they're going to work hard for Ryan Nelson. I know they're going to do what they're going to do to try and to steal some points. And here's the funny thing. They haven't won at home this year. They did win at Rogers Center when they were in a regular season. But they did not win at BMO Field since last year, around June, July. Now, you tell me, what do the players have to do to make these things happen? Not only do you have to rely on your goalkeeper, and Luis Robles was absolutely fantastic in the match. He was definitely man of the match for me. Olave did a good job. Holgorsen did a good job, too. But that was it. Defensively, they were brilliant. Offensively, they couldn't string two passes together, let alone one. Now, the complaint was the field was dry. They didn't water the field, Toronto. You want to call it an excuse? We'll see. You want to do it, you go right ahead. But the point is simple. The point is this, is that these guys cannot switch it on when they're home and switch it off when they're on the road. The quality on the Red Bulls is 10 times better than what Toronto has, and they are missing a bunch of good players. But that doesn't mean you have to assume it's going to be an easy 3 points. Something needs to change. We'll see what happens. Obviously, they did not have Connor Lay, did not have Lloyd Sam because they're both injured. But the point is that those guys are not in your starting 11. They usually come off the bench. And the thing is that Johnny Steele had a terrible game. Eric Alexander had a terrible game. The only time the ball was in the back of the net for either team, it was called offside. And those were right calls. Those were the correct calls. But I have to say that I'm very, very disappointed in how they performed. Obviously, you got a big game coming up at home this Saturday against Real Salt Lake. You can see on MSG Network. That'll be at 7 o'clock. And all I can say is this. Something needs to change, and they need to change it quickly. Because I understand they're going to do well at home. It's your fortress. You got to win at home. You got to do well at home. But when you're on the road playing an opponent that does not have the quality that you have to find a way to destroy them, tear them apart, rip them from limb to limb. Understand what I'm saying? Because if you're not going to do it, then what's the point of showing up in the first place? And I'm dumbfounded. I'm just dumbfounded about this whole situation. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say anymore. I mean, these road performances, the last two road performances, have to improve. And after they play Real Salt Lake at home, they have to go on the road at Sporting Kansas City on the 3rd of August, at the Columbus Crew on the 10th. And then come home against Philadelphia on the 17th, go to Chivas USA on the 25th, and that should be a win. And then you come home against DC United on the 31st to finish up August. Got to take care of business, not just at home, but on the road. That's all we have to say. That's all there has to say. And you know what? It's just a shame. It's just a shame that you had to go into Toronto. And it wasn't just a big bad egg they laid. It was basically 11 bad eggs that was laid. But let's go to the post-game interviews. Courtesy of MSG Network, Tina Servacio talking to Mike Petke after that 90-minute dreadful performance.
Mike, is your evaluation of the second half any different than your evaluation of the first half when I spoke to you?
I'm dumbfounded right now, to be honest with you. Part of me feels fortunate we got here with a point. Part of me says how the heck did we not get out of here with 3 points? But the way we played shows it. They came out with heart, determination. You know, they're the team that's at the bottom of the league. And they took it to us. And many fronts, they deserve to win today. Unfortunately, so I guess I do feel fortunate we got 1 point. It was passing wasn't crisp at all. The effort at times was lacking. Organization wasn't there. And to come from a Montreal game last week when we were firing on all cylinders to this, and you can understand it, maybe it's a bit of a downplay because you're on the road, but not that much of a difference. It's baffling.
I've been talking to a couple of the players, and they keep talking about the field being very dry. I mean, especially you, the former player, how does that affect your control?
I mean, when I came into the league in 98, I don't know if they had sprinklers on the field, to be honest with you. So only the last couple of years that I play on watered-down fields, so I'm probably the wrong person to ask that.
We were talking about the comparisons, home games, away games. I mean, what more do you want to see from this team? You go home. It's an important match next week against RSL.
Yeah, I want to see consistency. You know, you go from Colorado to Montreal to Lyon when you kind of stay up there, back down here to Colorado. I mean, to Toronto. I need consistency. You know, to play like this, we're not gonna win a championship. We're not gonna accomplish things that we want to accomplish like this. We're gonna be a mid-table team. We're gonna squeak into the playoffs unless things change. These are games that you should win. And there's no question about it. If we're going into Dallas or going into Salt Lake City and playing, you know, and you lose, you take your hat off to a team that's good at home. Toronto, we should have came here and we should have won. And we didn't do the right things to win. So hats off to Toronto for working harder than us. And we go home and get ready to Salt Lake.
But finally, though, your last line of defense, Luis Robles, you know, did come up big at times. What did you see in some of those saves?
No, I mean, his reaction save on that, particularly that one deflection, was phenomenal. And that's what you hope in a goalie. You hope that he steps up like that, you know. But there's also things from him, all the way up to the front. Distribution out of the back has to be better. But a great reaction save. Phenomenal.
And that's Mike Petke talking about the entire game as a whole, and he's right. He's absolutely right. And let me just throw out another quote here from Mike Petke, courtesy of Michael Lewis from Big Apple Soccer. And this is what he told the media on Tuesday about that DVD, because he said that he took the DVD broken in half and threw it out. He said, "It's an anomaly to me, to be honest with you. You know, it's one of these games I've watched I've watched every one of our games this year, and afterwards I literally got the DVD and I cracked it in half and threw it out. And it's something I don't plan on doing a lot in my career, but I don't think I could watch that game again. And he also says, I'm going to scrap it up to whatever excuses I can muster in my mind, to be honest with you, because that's the only way I'll be able to enjoy my day. You know, like I said in postgame, to win 4-0 against Montreal and to play very well, in my estimation, against them. And to play a team like Lyon, and aside from the first 10 minutes when we needed a bit of a wake-up call. To come back and tie a big team like that and then go to Toronto and to watch that unfold, it's tough for me because I know how hard my players work. I know how hard they work in practice. I know how when they are on, as we saw many times this year, what we're capable of. The thing that I have the issue with is, and I have a very good relationship with Ryan Nelson, and I don't want this to be disrespectful because it's not. I think he understands his team right now as well. But to go into a team like that, Toronto, where they are in the standings, and the quality that we have compared to what they have at the moment, I have no doubt that Ryan is going to build that team up over the next couple of years. But at this moment, that's a team that we have to 100% find a way to beat. And he's right. Mike Pecky is correct. And I want to thank Michael Lewis from Big Apple Soccer who wrote this, who got the quotes. You know, it's the truth. You're supposed to beat a team like Toronto who's not supposed to do anything to you. Nothing. And the Red Bulls allowed them to do something. Play hard and find a way to get them to at least get chances. Fine. They're going to get some chances, but they had most of the chances. And then you see Marius Obikov come in. Michael Bustamante come on in for Steele. For Espíndola. And these guys just did everything that the rest of the starting 11 should have done at the start. Oh, and let's not forget also Dax McCarty. Dax, unfortunately, getting that elbow, I think he's all right. I think he'll be fine getting ready for Salt Lake. But this team cannot have clunkers like they did in the last couple of road games. They can't. This isn't about a summer swoon. This is about, let's be honest, I'll chalk it up to this. That break in June, has hurt the timing. Because let's be honest, when you get 3 weeks off in league action, when you get that type of a break in the month of June and you're only playing three league games, yes, they did play their Open Cup game in the middle of the three-week break, but the problem is that there was no friendly scheduled in between the three-week break, and at the same time, let's be fair, let's be honest with ourselves, they had no friendly after the Open Cup game, and they should have had at least a friendly the day after, or should I say the Wednesday after the Open Cup game that they lost to at the Revolution in Harvard. Because that is the situation that the Red Bulls should have done. They should have had a friendly scheduled, or basically the league should never have given them that long of a break off. But that's the schedule. That's what's in front of them. Nothing you can do. So as we move forward here on the 46 Fire Unit Soccer Show, we'll give you a couple more post-game interviews. Courtesy of Madison Square Garden Network with Tina Servasio, here's Marcus Holgerson.
Marcus, you escape with a point here. What were some of the difficulties, though, to help you guys from breaking through against a team that is struggling?
Yeah, but it's hard to get here. They are, even if you say like they're struggling, but they are a hard-working team, and they play long balls behind us all the time and stretch us out. Our second half, especially our second half, we don't get any good passing game. We have a really bad passing game, and we don't move enough, and it's the pitch is dry here, really, really dry, and then it's hard to have a good passing game also.
Now, while Toronto did have some opportunities, they didn't finish, and you had a big part in that defending back there. I mean, what were some of the things you had to do to kind of clear up some of those last mistakes?
Yeah, there was a lot of battles in the our last third, as you're saying. We worked hard and we worked together, and we get out of here with a clean sheet, and that is always good. But our offense, we have to work a little bit on that. But if you see the Montreal game and then you see this game, it's two totally different game, and I hope we can play much, much better next week.
Why do you think the two games are so different?
Especially because it's the pitch here is it's also dry, and I think we're not surprised of it because last time we played it was the same, but it's hard to have a good passing game.
And finally, what do you think of Robles' save on Eckersley?
Yeah, that's a really good save, and we needed that. And it's really good for him. He did a really well game.
And that is Marcus Holgorsen. Basically, a lot of defenders being interviewed for what was going on out in the field on that Saturday afternoon over in Toronto, late Saturday afternoon in Toronto. So, you know, once again, questions about field. And, you know, look, if that's how Toronto FC wants it, not a lot of water, heck, going to have to fight it. You're going to have to fight it. You know, that's all I can say. That's all I can do, to be honest. So, I don't know, guys. You know, the dry field argument. We'll see what happens, you know, the next time they go to Toronto. But let's be honest, that should have been 3 points. And more on the way here, obviously. Here is Kosuke Kimura with his opinions of the match.
Kosuke, and this was a tough match. It seems like you guys couldn't get the ball out of that defensive third. So what were some of the things that you and the back line really had to do to defend and break up a lot of the opportunities that Toronto had?
I mean, definitely field was sticky a little bit, you know, because they want it that way. They're just going to kick the long ball, and the ball just sits there. Ball doesn't run it quick enough. So for us, it was tough for us to, like, build enough on back. And the field was so much narrower compared to our field, you know. That's our away game that you have to face. But, you know, just like you said, I think we did create good chances in the first half and the second half again there, but we couldn't, you know, we couldn't make it. But, yeah, they had a good couple of chances, but those games you just have to battle, you know. You come out away game and it's going to be tough. You know it's going to be tough because Toronto, they got nothing to lose. They're just going to come out strong. We knew that too, but I think they hit a little bit in the time second half. We let them have confidence, and then they just, you know, came out strong, but we have to defend. But I think we did well as a defensive, you know. Yeah.
And that is Kosuke Kimura discussing about, once again, what Holgorsen was saying about the lack of water on the ground, on the field. But once again, you got to fight through that. You got to go and fight through that. You got to do things a lot better to get through. And that's all. So basically, you know, whatever, you know, they were saying, they're correct about it. But obviously, it's tough not seeing the Red Bulls getting the full 3 points in this one where they should have. The man of the match, of course, Luis Robles, talking about that save with Tino Servacio and everything else that was happening in the match. Here he is right now, Luis Robles.
Luis, you guys escaped here with a point, and no play bigger than your game-saving save on that rocket shot by Eckersley, and it deflected. I mean, can you take us through how you're able to change direction yourself to get to the ball?
I just reacted to it. Luckily, he was far enough that I could see the deflection, and it was a clean deflection. It wasn't anything where it was had too much spin or anything. So I did what I could to help the team keep the zero. I mean, there wasn't really too many pauses that we could take out of today's match other than we got a zero, we got a point.
For yourself in goal, we saw this so many times on corner kicks and free kicks. I mean, how much has your confidence had an impact on the results in these saves?
Well, in goalkeeping, it's all about confidence. And I know in the beginning of the season, there was some iffy moments, but I've been working with Rafa, I've been working with Ryan, and just the support from those guys has been great, Hartman as well. So as long as that confidence stays there, then I'm feeling good, no doubt about that.
It just seemed like all game the Red Bulls couldn't get the ball out of that defensive third. How helpful was Holgorsen in some of the ways that he was cleaning up some of the mistakes?
Those guys played great. From the standpoint of the effort, it wasn't just Holgorsen, it was Olave, it was Brandon, it was Koske. Those guys, they really left on the field 90 minutes today, so a big applause to those guys, because there wasn't a lot of things that we can take from today's game, but, you know, it's a road game, we got a point, we at least came away with a point, and that's something we can take away for sure.
And that's Luis Robles on the match and how they played. And, you know, you just got to say it's been one of those things where it's really, really difficult. And you just hope that get it out of their heads, get out of their minds, and just go out and just try to find a way to you know, have a better match. Because guess what? Real Salt Lake's coming in. And even though they're going to get Savarillo back from the Costa Rica, so will the Red Bulls with Roy Miller. And you just really have to say that, you know, they got to find a way. They got to find a way to, they just got to find a way to do this. They got to find a way to get out of this rut on the road. And hopefully, they can find a way to fix this problem, because this is getting ridiculous. This is just getting ridiculous on how they are performing on the road. Shouldn't be like this. Should not at all be like this. But it's been happening. And they're just going to have to find a way to get this problem solved. That's all you can really say. They have to find a way to get this problem solved. Because this is really getting ridiculous on the road. But as we look at the standings in Major League Soccer at the moment, and as we do take a look at the standings in MLS right now, Sporting Kansas City has a four-point lead on both Montreal and the Red Bulls. Of course, Montreal has two games in hand. They have 32 points. Red Bulls also with 32 points. Philadelphia in fourth with 31 points. And Houston has the fifth spot for 29. New England with 27 and sixth. Chicago in 7th with 24, Columbus with 23 in 8th, Toronto with 14, and DC United with 10, and DC's in dead last. And the funny thing is, DC United is dead last in the league. 20 matches played. They have only won twice. They have drawn 4 times, and they have 14 losses. 9 goals for, 33 goals against, with a minus 24 differential. This is interesting. They have 7 games remaining at home. Or excuse me, it's a different thing. Home goals for, home goals difference. Give me a break. I'm not going to go there. Forget it. Let's just put it this way. DC's in dead last in the league and in the East. There you go. Chivas USA is dead last in the West, but they have 17 points, and they have 4 wins. So at least they're doing somewhat all right. At least you can say they are 17th in the league, whereas Toronto is 18th, and DC is dead last as number 19. Here's the Western Conference. Real Salt Lake, 37 points. 11-6-4, scoring 33 and allowing 20 with a 13 differential. Portland Timbers in second place with 34 points, 8 wins, 10 draws, 2 losses for Portland, 34 and 18 against. The Galaxy, 10 wins, 8 losses and 3 draws, 33 points. In third place, they've scored 32 and allowed 25. Vancouver Whitecaps in fourth place, 32 points out of 20 games, 9 wins, 5 draws, 6 losses, scoring 33 and allowing 28. FC Dallas, 32 points and in fifth place. My, how they have fallen from the top spot. 21 matches played, 32 points in fifth place. They have 8 wins, 8 draws, 5 losses, scoring and allowing 27 goals. In sixth place, Colorado Rapids with 31 points. They have 22 matches played with 8 wins, 7 draws, 7 losses, scoring 26 and allowing 24. The Seattle Sounders right now are in seventh place. They have 25 points out of 18 games, winning 7, drawing 4, and losing 7, scoring 22 and allowing 21. San Jose Earthquakes in eighth place in the West. They have 24 points out of 21 games, 6 wins, 6 draws, 9 losses, scoring 21, allowing 32. And, of course, once again, Chivas USA, they have 17 points out of 20 matches, 4 wins, 5 draws, 11 losses, scoring 18 and allowing 35. So there you have it. That is the situation that's in front of you. That's a situation that we all hope can be fixed. And just want to see what's going to want to double check something here. HBO, nope. Yep, that's what I thought. Okay, because I'm on Twitter at the moment. Grant Wall says, okay, he got rid of it. Grant noticed the Grant. Don't, I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you, of course. The HB, the Real Sports with Brian Gumbel. he fixed it up and. Because I was about to tell him, you know, it's not 9 p.m. It's not 9 o'clock or else. Because, I mean, I got my DVR going on this thing. I'm interested to see what's going to happen. I don't know if it'll be the first thing they're going to show. It might be something else. But to be honest with you, I'm very interested to see what's happening. But, you know, you just got to say that it should be interesting and what the heck they're going to show and what's going to be. But I have to tell you, it's really, really interesting in what's going on here with the Chivas USA situation. Don't forget, everyone, at 10 o'clock tonight on HBO, Real Sports with Brian Gumbel. He's going to show the situation with Chivas USA. I think it should be a pretty good episode. We'll take a look and see. I'm going to watch it too. I just want to give a shout-out to Jake Stillick, the sports freak. He was on local Jacksonville radio. Of course, rumors of a possible NASL franchise in Jacksonville in northern Florida. That would be pretty darn good. And depending on where it's going to be in Jacksonville, we don't know about that yet. But hopefully, it's going to be really interesting. Of course, join him along with Kyle McNaughton, known as KyleMac13 on Twitter, over in, for this show. It's really going to be good, local Jacksonville radio. So it should be interesting, and it should be awesome to see what's going to happen. And as we move forward here, there's a discussion right now about where can you do for the Philadelphia Union through the goalkeeper on Twitter. Of course, that's Jonathan Tannenwald, discussing about extra rail service on the SEPTA line. It's going to PPL Park. Now, obviously, rail is very important when it comes to this country getting to soccer games. Obviously, an internal service that you'd love to see with your soccer stadiums. Now, my argument, of course, being a train fan, is I think it would be fantastic during Open Cup games to have Amtrak be hopefully a sponsor for my Open Cup shows. And, of course, I'm working on that at the moment to let everyone know. I'm setting something up here. I haven't done anything yet. just to let you know, nothing has been moved forward yet. I'm in the planning stages of this situation. And right now, it is just the planning stages of this situation. So I'll let you know if something big ever happens. But once again, if you Google certain teams and where they play in certain cities and towns, Amtrak is either not far away, Amtrak is medium far away. But the truth of the matter is, we really need public transportation to get to our stadiums. Jonathan Tannenwald on Twitter currently is saying about maybe they should have put PPL Park somewhere in near the Philadelphia area where the Ben Franklin Memorial Bridge is also a train bridge for a SEPTA line. Now, I'm on Google Maps currently, and I'm looking at the situation, the roadway that is near the Commodore or just the train line that's underneath the Commodore Bay Bridge. Now, obviously, there's going to be some finagling for, I guess, where residents live, or if there's going to be a area where you're going to have to buy the land to build a so-called SEPTA line, so you can get to PPL Park better. And as I'm looking at the situation, I think there could be a way, if you look at Google Maps and you see that there's a possibility for room. On SEPTA lines, they're going towards and away from PPL Park. Now, I don't know how long or how long a SEPTA train is. I would have to assume it's at least between 6 to 8 cars. That's just my opinion, of course. I'm not sure. It's just my opinion. But apparently, for those of you that are in the Chester area, a possibility could be seen if you purchase the land that is along the line here between Yarnell Street and Rainey Street. I think you could put a platform there. I think there's enough room to put a platform on both sides. And at the same time, a nice entranceway for the volume of the trains. I would have to say maybe a ticket machine near the entrances. But I think that could be the possibility, not so much for the traffic coming to the station, going to PPL Park, but of course the trains that are going away from PPL Park, of course coming from the Philadelphia section. And it's near the Commodore Bay Bridge roadways, and I think it could be a success. But then again, once I don't claim to know the area. I'm only looking at it from a distance with the help of Google Maps. That's why you need experts who know, not assume, who knows their areas very well, which is why it's called research. That's the only thing you have to know. That's the only thing you have to be aware of. And you know what? All I can say is, that's the situation right there. That's all I can say. That's all I can do. So that's all. Just trying to help out. That's all I can say. Just trying to throw my two cents out there. And, of course, I have to ask the question because, hey, I am not familiar with the Philadelphia area, with the exceptions of the historical area of where Independence Hall is, the Liberty Bell, the Constitution Museum. Also, knowing the bus line to get to Geno's for the cheesesteaks and Pat's. And, of course, the street to get to Penn's Landing, walking there to the Franklin Fountain, which is the best ice cream place I've ever been to. It's awesome. I love it. It's fantastic. But other than that, oh, of course, knowing where the Phillies play and the Flyers and the Sixers play and the Eagles play, you know, I've been there too. Driving there, of course. Other than that, I don't know Philadelphia very well. But I can go to people who are from the area that can help me out. And that's why I ask them. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. I'm just trying to help out. Just trying to do my bit to find out the information. And here comes, just some information has come across the desk here. MLS suspends, fines FC Dallas's forward Eric Hassley from the Associated Press. I wonder what this is all about. Here it is. MLS Disciplinarian Committee has suspended Eric Hassley for one game and fined him for violent conduct in a game at Montreal. Hassley received the punishment for kicking impact midfielder Davy Arnault in the 84th minute of Saturday's game. Hassley drew a yellow card for the play, but the committee said further action was warranted. The committee also suspended Real Salt Lake defender Chris Wingert for one game and fined him for crashing into Sporting KC forward Kai Kamara in the first minute of Saturday's game. He also was suspended for one game for receiving two yellow cards on the play. Also, Portland Timbers defender Andrew Jean-Baptiste was fined for embellishment in the 18th minute of Saturday's game against the Philadelphia Union. So if you're a Red Bull supporter, there will be no Chris Wingert this coming Saturday against the New York Red Bulls. So there you go. So there it is. It should be interesting, but we'll have to find out. So, hey, let's see what happens. So, there you go. But once again, ladies and gentlemen, that's the situation. That's what's in front of us. And we'll see what's going on. Once again, don't forget tomorrow, pre- and post-game shows of the 2013 CONCACAF Gold Cup semifinals as the United States takes on Honduras. Join me along with Kartik Krishnayer as we preview and review. Try to get one more person to join us tomorrow night if we can. And that's about it. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank my guests. I want to thank Matt Goschert from the Massive Report that covers the Columbus Crew. I want to thank Sean Donahue from New England Soccer Today. I want to thank you guys for listening to the show. I always appreciate it. Once again, I apologize for allowing someone to come on for no reason, who I thought it was Sean Donahue, and it's just absolutely terrible. I apologize for that, and I hope to avoid more of those crap moments that do come our way. Once again, if you're going to troll, don't troll me. Go somewhere else. I want no part of you. You don't want any part of me. I don't like it. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening. And as always, enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody. Take care and talk to you tomorrow night.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.